morning, Cascadia. You're listening to your community radio station, KBOO, Portland, Oregon, at 90.7 FM. Today is Tuesday, May 26th, 2009, and this is Air Cascadia, long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Liam Delta.
The Bonneville Power Authority gets stimulus money with a few strings attached.
The great wind rush is on in eastern Oregon, and investors are staking claims on public land.
And President Barack Obama's Supreme Court nominee Sonia Sotomayor is already getting Republicans riled up.
Portland area weather, mostly sunny today, except for the chemtrail grid laid out earlier this morning, with highs in the 70s, and then tonight, low clouds, temperatures in the 40s to 50s.
And first we go to headlines from around Cascadia. Friday afternoon in Salem, House Bill 3058 was on the table. This bill is, of course, the fast-tracked legislation that would put everyone's land up for grabs. Specifically, the grab would be Palomar's. That's, of course, the company bent upon clear-cutting a slash through Mount Hood's National Forest, of course, much more than that, in order to drive a natural gas pipeline through to California. Back with me this morning to talk about the most recent events in the LNG saga is Olivia Schmidt with Columbia Riverkeeper. Good morning, Olivia.
Good morning, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being back. Can you talk a little bit about what happened in Salem on Friday?
Absolutely. On Friday, we had between 30 and 40 folks who came out to speak in opposition to House Bill 3058, the LNG fast-track bill that would threaten so many landowners and our national forests in the state of Oregon. Our presence was definitely felt. I got a correspondence earlier in the week from a legislator who said they'd received over 400 emails from folks opposing the bill. Our presence there and that push from the grassroots community meant that we got two opposition votes out of the hearing. Unfortunately, that wasn't enough to kill the bill in the Rules Committee, but Representative Sarah Gelser and Representative Mary Nolan stood up and represented their people by voting no on the bill. Unfortunately, their colleagues did not follow that example. So now the bill moves on to the House floor and then to the Senate. We will continue fighting the bill in an effort to protect Mount Hood National Forest, in an effort to protect farmers and agriculturalists throughout the state who are impacted by these pipelines, and really to maintain a law that works perfectly well right now, which they're trying to change to facilitate these pipelines and transmission lines that are being proposed by these large out-of-state companies.
I think people still haven't really got what this would mean. I don't think people really have been able to put this all together and come up with an accurate picture of what this would do to the state. But something is going on Thursday, Northwest Natural's shareholder meeting. Can you talk a little bit about that, too?
Yes. This year, on Thursday at 1 p.m. at the Oregon Convention Center, which is 777 MLK Boulevard, we will be protesting the Palomar Pipeline at the Northwest Natural shareholders meeting. This is the second time we've done this in 2 years. It's going to be a lot of fun. Basically, the issue is the Northwest Natural Gas Company, which is a monopoly in Portland, provides most users with natural gas, are pushing investment in liquefied natural gas, which would raise rates. It would raise our utility bills. It's threatening hundreds of landowners across the state. And it's the pipeline that would be threatening Mount Hood National Forest, the 47-mile, 150 to 300-foot wide clear cut, including old growth, crossing the Deschutes, the Upper Clackamas River, Fish Creek. So we're coming out on Thursday to protest the investment in more foreign energy sources, to protest the abuse of landowners in the state, and to protest the potential clear cut on Mount Hood that would be enacted by
Thank you so much for that, Olivia. We'll have more on that later in the week, building up to Thursday, and we hope there'll be a huge turnout. Thank you so much. My guest has been Olivia Schmidt with Columbia Riverkeeper.
The BBA is one of the biggest recipients of stimulus dollars. The agency has gained $3.25 billion in additional borrowing authority. Even lawmakers who opposed the stimulus bill have welcomed the blessed event. The money will go to upgrade and expand the BPA's sprawling power generating network. The work's expensive, but supporters say it will provide energy and jobs for the area. Unlike most stimulus dollars, which add directly to the deficit, the BPA must repay with interest whatever it uses.
Well, that's interesting, except for the wind rush is on in Harney County's Pueblo Mountains, and the land that is being considered is, in many cases, public land. The Windrush, of course, is mainly because state rules require utilities to buy more renewable power. There's Americans' relentless demand for cheap energy, and, of course, all that public land is just sitting there waiting to be exploited. In 2006, the BLM received 6 right-of-way applications for wind testing. The number shot up to 24 last year. But wind farms in relatively untrammeled public lands present a number of potential problems. And, of course, they pit 2 environmental concerns, the quest for green power to combat climate change, and the more traditional conservation of undeveloped lands. So these two two groups that usually work together find themselves somewhat at loggerheads. The answer, of course, is not blowing in the wind.
Yeah. There's no doubt that wind is the 21st century's answer to the country's electrical needs, but the wind power industry is looking for some stability, a commitment from the federal government that could help pull it out of the doldrums of the past 6 months by guaranteeing it a place in the country's long-term energy mix. The Senate Committee on Energy and Natural Resources is considering legislation that would require a federal standard for wind power generation, and then there are the grants and tax credits in the government's package.
Now, of course, we have to go and revisit Hanford, another failed effort to keep the world safe. The Hanford Nuclear Reservation is getting nearly $2 billion in stimulus money for job-generating projects. There's always the jobs in it. But the top watchdog over the former nuclear weapons production site questions whether the extra money will actually reduce cleanup delays. The U.S. Department of Energy is using the money for scores of construction and cleanup projects in one of the world's largest hazardous waste sites. The projects include cleaning contaminated groundwater and buried waste along the Columbia River. That's a high priority, of course, for Oregon and Washington regulators, but I personally have recently been to Hanford, and I can tell you there's stuff lying around everywhere, and that's just the stuff that you can see. So much of it's still underground, and we have really no idea yet what the extent of the contamination is likely to turn out to be.
A Salem business hopes to turn dairy waste into automobile fuel. Diesel Brewing would burn dairy waste to create butanol as a renewable fuel. The company plans to open a pilot plant in Salem by the end of the year that would burn a combination of wood and dairy waste.
I like this so much better than the LNG option or even the wind farm. A recommendation. Okay, now we go to back to the woods. A recommendation that could increase timber harvests over recent averages of state-owned forests will head the agenda when the Oregon Board of Forestry meets next week in Salem. Hint, hint. They're meeting next week in Salem. The board staff plans to propose rule changes at the June 3rd meeting to revise the state forest management plan to allow a different balance of economic, environmental, and social benefits. The board will also recommend a draft strategy to guide Oregon's Department of Forestry Management of Wildlife Habitats. It replaces a draft habitat conservation plan that is now in place, and let me tell you right now, it's much, much worse.
So it's going to be more unbalanced.
Exactly.
A federal appeals court has reimposed an order halting plans to expand a phosphate mine in southeastern Idaho. A 3-judge panel from the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals issued the order this week for the Smoky Canyon mine. The J.R. Simplett Company wants to expand the mine into some roadless areas near the Idaho-Wyoming border. The company says expanding is essential to keeping its fertilizer plant in Pocatello running for the next 15 years. Environmentalists oppose the idea, claiming an expansion into roadless lands would be a major disturbance.
And now this, an Oregon man has filed a federal lawsuit claiming his civil rights were violated when required to live at a place with daily religious services following his release from prison. According to Jason Duane Davies' lawsuit, Lane County parole officers required him to live at the Eugene Mission once he got out of prison. The mission provides food and beds to homeless people, but it makes them attend daily gospel services. The lawsuit contends Lane County violated the U.S. Constitution's separation of church and state clause by requiring Davies to live in a fundamentally religious facility while under supervision of parole and probation officers. Well, out of the frying pan into the fire, eh?
After a man asked to have his Social Security number removed from his medical records, a Yakima clinic told him to remove a portable heart monitor and turned him away. Aram Langham said the Yakima Heart Center already has his driver's license and group health card, Langen said he thought he was being prudent when he asked the center to remove his Social Security number from its files.
They'd only lose it anyway. President Barack Obama chose federal appeals judge Sonia Sotomayor to become the nation's first Hispanic Supreme Court justice today. Barring the unexpected, Senate confirmation seems likely, given the large Democratic majority. If approved, Sotomayor would join Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg as the second woman on the current court, and just the third in history. She would succeed retiring Justice David Souter. But there are political nuances surrounding the nomination that make it a palimpsest for Republican character. Joining us this morning to talk about the implications is independent journalist working with the Lund Report, David Rosenfeld. Good morning, David.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Thank you so much for being here. David's going to be sitting in for Spencer Raymond, who's on a summer job right now. So this is a very interesting appointment. In any other political environment, atmosphere, I think she would be a shoo-in, but of course Republicans have got all kinds of objections.
Right. I mean, she was nominated just about 2 hours ago, and we already have these quotes coming out from right-wing groups. They're calling her a judicial activist, and it seems clear that immediately, you know, the arguments are going to be about guns, gays, and God. And this one quote from Wendy Long with the Judicial Confirmation Network says that Judge Sotomayor is a liberal judicial activist of the first order who thinks her own personal political agenda is more important than the law is written. And this seems like one of the main points that they're going to be going after her on, and that is that, you know, she can use the bench to sort of create policy. And I found it interesting that a New York Times piece in 2005 that looked at the Supreme Court justices, judging by, you know, whether you overturn a law, you would say that judge was an activist, judging by those standards. And they found that Judge Thomas, Judge Kennedy, and Judge Scalia had overturned existing law more times than any of the other justices. So in a sense, you would think that those right-wing justices would then be the most activist, but it seems like we're painting this brush on a lot of the judges that are viewed as liberal, per se. So that seems to be what's going to happen.
Once again, the Republicans got somewhat out ahead as far as semantics are concerned. I think a case in point is that just today the Supreme Court overturned a longstanding ruling that stopped police from initiating questions unless a defendant's lawyer was present. This is going to, of course, make it much easier for prosecutors to interrogate suspects, and the prosecution will definitely make hay with this. That has political implications. That was, of course, a 5-4, and, of course, party lines in many ways. Scalia, of course, read the opinion, and he says that it was going to have minimal effects on criminal defendants. I doubt that's the case at all. And I think that is exactly what they want to preserve, the 5-4 split, so that it looks like there's no political there's no political activism involved. Yet, of course, it's there, and they want maintaining that slim margin is going to be, of course, their ace in the hole. They're not going to let go of that. Thank you so much for that. This morning, David Rosenfeld, independent journalist working with the LundReport.org, is with us. Spencer Raymond will be back later in the summer. Thank you very, very much, David.
This isn't the kind of thing we expect to come up in Canada, but there it is. Canada's Environment and Plastics Industry Council says reusable grocery bags are environmentally friendly, but they're, quote, a breeding ground for bacteria and pose public health risks, unquote. But why wouldn't they say that? They're the lobbying group representing the plastics industry. A study in Toronto found 16 out of 25 used bags showed some bacterial contamination, which, of course, came from the groceries. So maybe we should ban the groceries.
Ban the groceries is what I say. Finally, on this note, as it turns out, the decline of General Motors will be putting thousands of auto workers and managers out of work. But, of course, it's a field day for lawyers. The GM potential bankruptcy is so infinitely huge that it's going to absorb virtually all the bankruptcy lawyers in the nation.
This has been Headlines and Commentary from Air Cascadia for Tuesday, May 26, 2009. Today's editor is Chris Andre. Engineering is Janet Anderson. The KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director is Kathleen Stevenson. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Chris Andre. You're listening to member-supported KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM. Your support, and your support only, keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thank you so much, members. Thanks for listening. Have a good day.